Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, angels sent from up above. You know you made my world light up. When I was down, when I was hurt, you came to lift me up. Life is a twist.
County, ladies and gentlemen, you know it's always in Union City. Insider Energy probably brings to you Politically Direct, and I am the Professor Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here tonight, the 7th of March, the year 2019, and I hope you're all doing well, even after some of the nuisance of snow and ice on our roads this week. Folks, spring is on its way. Trust me, be patient. She'll be here sooner than we think. So again, let's hold out as a spring hopefully will engulf our lives much sooner than later, folks. I don't know about you, but I'm definitely done with this winter. And, of course, I want to thank you all for listening from wherever you are here throughout the darn state and, of course, throughout the good old U.S. of A. You can always write to the show's inbox at any time, folks, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Once again, write to the show if you have any suggestions for guests, topics, or anything else. Write to me. I love getting email, and I do answer them promptly. Write to me, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram @politicallydirectnj. You can also check me out on Instagram @your_favorite_Fernando. Brand new followers, brand new likes every day. I appreciate the love there on Instagram. Also, folks, if you have a chance, if you are on Twitter, look for me @ProfessorFUribe. And of course, for all you Facebook subscribers, take a moment and go to the official page for Politically Direct. Like it, of course, and I ask you to tell your friends to do the same. Now, I do want to hear from you tonight at some point, so don't be shy, ladies and gentlemen. Call me toll-free, 818-572-8032. Once again, toll-free number tonight is 818-572-8032, and our toll-free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. Now, don't forget to check out Insider NJ, folks, by going to their website, www.insidernj.com, for the absolute best coverage of the political scene and, quite frankly, the best journalism that you'll find each and every day throughout the state of New Jersey. And look no further, folks, than Insider NJ. Now, once you go on the website, click on the subscribe button at the very top, and you'll be automatically enrolled in their morning intelligence briefing. So when you're up in the morning having your cup of coffee, maybe walking your dog, maybe getting a light workout in at home, or just having breakfast and maybe watching the cable news shows, maybe you're like me, you're watching the sports shows, whether it's on ESPN or Fox Sports. Hey, I love my sports, love the debate. And, you know, normally as I'm watching the shows, I'm scrolling through my smartphone, checking out my inbox. And guess what? Every morning, the morning intelligence briefing will be right there for you, courtesy of Insider NJ. Again, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to follow them on Twitter, like them on Facebook, folks. And never forget, start your day with Insider NJ. Now, the opinions and views expressed tonight and every week here on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, or the staff. Well, folks, again, happy March to everybody. Happy Women's History Month to all the ladies tuning in tonight. And certainly, Women's History Month is every month for all that the ladies do for us, whether it's our wives, our mothers, our aunts, our grandmothers, all the special ladies in our lives, of course. You know, it's a great month to celebrate a lot of heritage and history, certainly to honor the March. So again, shout out to the ladies here during Women's History Month. And folks, don't forget, this weekend is daylight savings time. So on Sunday morning, you know, at about 2 a.m., we'll be setting our clocks forward an hour. So that'll be great. We'll get to see some sunshine even around 8 o'clock, which is awesome. It reminds us that spring is around the corner. So you know what? You know, you're losing an hour of sleep, but hey, it reminds us that warmer days are hopefully ahead. I don't know about you. I'm done with this winter. The just temperatures in the 20s every other day, the teens, it's driving me crazy. I don't know about you folks, but I'm done. I can't wait for spring. I can't wait to start rocking some cargo shorts, my Yankee jersey. And it's just a reminder, baseball season's upon us. So, warmer days are indeed ahead. So, folks, I hope you had a great week here for my students approaching their spring break. It's well deserved. You work hard this semester. So, certainly enjoy. Please party responsibly, of course, but have a great spring break. And I could definitely use the break myself. So, folks, we appreciate you tuning in tonight. Again, call me toll-free, 818-572-8032. Once again, our toll-free number brought to you by Insider NJ. And, folks, you know, it got me thinking today as I like to sort of, you know, browse the news feed and sort of check out different publications online, certainly. And, you know, there was a story that caught my attention this week and reminded me about how identity politics and, quite frankly, how liberalism has infested our educational system, and listen, I'm an academic and, you know, I work in higher education, so I know full well the amount of liberals that I have to tolerate in academia. But folks, it's really disturbing how it's trickling down into our high schools and well into our middle schools and even elementary schools. And it sort of reminds me of how toxic the left, not just in New Jersey, but nationally, especially in our educational system. And that, folks, is the subject of tonight's first shot here on Politically Direct. Now, a good story there this week, reported by Ms. Erin Vogt from New Jersey 101.5 FM. Nice shout out to her, reported this week. And apparently there was a mom that was upset at a anti-Trump T-shirt that was displayed in a New Jersey classroom. Now, this takes place in Roxbury, New Jersey. It's a municipality in Morris County. And just to sort of quote Erin's story here, just to sort of pass here some important points here, a teacher that hung in a public school classroom in Morris County has renewed one mother's criticism of a teacher who she says is pushing his political views on students. Now, the shirt featured an image of President Donald Trump along with the words, quote, nope, and, quote, viva la resistance. Now, a student took a picture of the shirt last month and shared it with the township resident, Laura Whitney, who says this is a latest example of the teacher making political statements. Now, school superintendent Loretta Rattleleg sent an email to New Jersey 101.5 that the incident was, quote, a personal matter and therefore cannot be discussed. All I can say is it was handled appropriately. Now, Rattleleg did not explain the context of the T-shirt display or how the situation was handled. Now, the photo was taken on February the 13th, according to Whitney, and she was told that the shirt was removed on Monday, March the 4th. Now, Whitney has a son who graduated from Roxbury High School in 2016 after his own political clash with the same teacher, she said. And she said her son, who is Jewish, was forced to redo a current events project on Israel, this time using Al Jazeera as a primary source. Folks, if you know anything about Al Jazeera, it is about as anti-Semitic a news website as there is out there on the internet. And certainly, if you know anything about sort of the head of Al Jazeera, I think you can, you know, it tells you everything you need to know in terms of the content that they've had sympathizing with awful terrorist groups throughout the years. But in any event, Whitney said the school administration ignored her emails, pointing out what she said was the Middle East-based news organization's anti-Semitic language. She said her son ultimately redid his project so as to not fail the class. According to Whitney, other parents are privately worried about the same teacher promoting his political views to students, but are reluctant to go public with concerns because their children are still enrolled in school. Now, Whitney said after multiple complaints from her and other parents, quote, at this point, he should be made an example of rather than defended by the superintendent. Now, New Jersey has seen a couple of other cases of political speech being questioned in public schools. Back in January, for example, a Homedale High School student by the name of Boris Kazenko said he was denied acceptance into the National Honor Society as a result of his support for President Trump, couple years earlier, a Wall Township High School in South Jersey was the center of controversy after a student's T-shirt with the message, Trump, make America great again, was censored in the 2017 yearbook. Well, folks, listen, as someone who works in academia, I can just say this. And it's something that is quite demoralizing for me. And this is one of the reasons I think I don't really like discussing politics with my colleagues in academia. Number one, listen, if you've listened to this show on a regular basis, you know that I'm pretty much a very center-right type of academic and also a center-right, a political commentator here via Insider NJ. When I've appeared on NJTV, on Reporters Roundtable on a couple of occasions, certainly I think you can look at my rhetoric and know that it's very middle of the road. But one thing I don't like to do, folks, is bring my politics into the classroom. And I think what we're seeing, just with this example this week in Roxbury, and of course the previous example, that were cited by Aaron Boat in the New Jersey 101.5 FM article, it reminds us of how toxic the left, the American left, has become. A lot of avenues of our life, folks, whether it's in pop culture, whether it's force-feeding identity politics down our throats. But listen, we've all known that in education, especially at the collegiate level, that predominantly most of the educators are very liberal, if not far left liberals and even radicals. And I've seen it firsthand. You know, listen, the idea that you should be able to at this level without inserting your politics, I think, is the way it should be. Because if trying to do that, folks, that's not teaching. That's indoctrination. And that's something that, for me, I take a lot of pride because I don't do it. You know, and I'm someone that doesn't subscribe to any sort of left-wing politics. Listen, I'm progressive on some social issues. I don't deny that for a second. But the idea of bringing my political ideology and trying to indoctrinate my students, like, that's not teaching. That's brainwashing. We're seeing far too much of it. Again, this example right here in Roxbury, some of the other examples cited in the article. And folks, we see it on our college campuses all the time. We see radical left-wing professors espousing some crazy ideologies on campus. And we've seen that, listen, you know, all this talk about free speech in our college campuses, well, it's not really free speech for conservative students. I think we've seen firsthand what happens to students that happen to being conservative and what happens to them on college campuses around the country. You know, students at UT Berkeley get assaulted by a left-wing student. We've seen individuals like Charlie Kirk and Candace Owens from Turning Point USA go campus to campus across this country. We've seen Ben Shapiro attempt to go to college campuses to give speeches, and he's been shut down or he's been escorted off the premises because there was a revolt by the administration. There was a certain amount of faculty that signed a petition to get him off. It's demoralizing, folks, because, again, this is not what we send our kids to college for. And as a college professor teaching the social sciences, I take my responsibility seriously to make sure that I don't bring my politics into the classroom. Now, listen, sometimes, you know what, in this age of social media, in this age of the Internet, certainly where it's, but, you know, as I've told my students, I mean, coming up pretty much summer, we'll be celebrating, ideally, the 25th anniversary of the invention of the Internet. So for the entire duration of the science that I teach in their lifetimes, all they've ever known is the Internet. The idea that social media has taken over their lives is also a very stark reality. It's not hard for my students to Google me. It's not hard for my students to look me up on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, whether it's on a show or anything else. And listen, I'm not some bombastic ideologue. I'm not some bomb thrower that comes on here every single week on Blog Talk Radio via my partnership with Insider NJ. And I'm absolutely just going bonkers. You know, I'm not acting like Alex Jones on this program. Okay. I think I'm a reasonable, fair man that comes on and invites guests from all avenues of the political spectrum to have a conversation. And it's that sort of decorum and methodology that I take to the classroom, folks. But a lot of my colleagues in academia don't do that. They'd rather show up with their Bernie Sanders buttons on their book bags or their Hillary T-shirts or to have propaganda splattered all over their doors during office hours. I mean, I don't do that. That's not conducive to a healthy learning environment. And it's interesting because, you know, those of you that know me, you know fully well, I'm a very sociable person, someone that's very outgoing, loves to talk to people. But when I'm on campus and I'm sitting during my office hours, I'm the most antisocial person possible. I just want to be left alone. When I have my coffee, I want to have my muffin. I don't want to be bothered. Because every 2 seconds, I'll get a colleague saying, Did you see what Trump said? Or denouncing some conservative figure on television, whether it's an elected official or a pop culture type of figure. And you know what? I don't want to entertain that. Not because I'm not tolerant, folks. I can have a conversation. But I think what we've learned for some time, especially with many members of the American left, whether it's in academia, whether it's pop culture, whether it's even in government, it's becoming increasingly more difficult to have any sort of civilized dialogue with those on the left. Again, not all. Listen, I have some friends who are more liberal, but they're rational, and I can have a civil discourse with them. But I think, folks, what we're seeing in a large portion of the left is this sort of irrationality that's engulfing, again, our educational system. It's engulfing our government. It's engulfing our daily lives. And I just don't understand why more people don't see it. I see it in the classroom, and it's something I don't practice, and I wish it was something that my colleagues would not practice, but somehow they find a way to do so. And beyond it being disgraceful, it's really a disservice to our students. And that's not teaching, folks. That's indoctrination. And it's a sad testament to the times we're living in here, not just in New Jersey, folks, but on the national political climate where, you know, even in the classroom, our kids are not safe from radical political ideologues, and no less them being teachers. And that's a real shame. And that, folks, is my first shot here on Politically Direct. All right, folks, 818-572-8032. Toll free number tonight to call in. Love to hear from you later on the show. We'll take some calls later in the show. I do want to get to my guest right now. She is holding, and folks, it is 8:17 on the East Coast here on Blog Talk Radio. It's my pleasure to welcome here to the program for the very first time. She is an extremely noteworthy public affairs consultant. You've seen her on My Nine, on Chasing Jersey. The great Jeanette Hoffman joins us tonight here Politically Direct. Jeanette, welcome to the show.
Hi, Fernando. How are you?
I'm good.
Great to be on the show.
I told you. Well, I'm glad you're on here. I hope you like the intro. I told you I wouldn't disappoint with something really, really glorious for you.
Yeah. So you gave me a great opening. Civil discourse. That is something our country desperately needs in 2019. That is for sure. I'm so glad to be on the show today.
Oh, listen, the pleasure's all mine. And again, I'm an admirer of your work. Certainly, I appreciate the follow on Twitter. I definitely check out a lot of your content. And you know, Jeanette, it's one of those things, and we have a lot to talk about, so we'll definitely try to pack it in as much as we can. I don't know how much you had a chance to listen to my opening monologue, but as an educator myself in academia, I was just sort of citing an article about a classroom in Morris County that was written about this week about a teacher that was hanging a anti-Trump T-shirt in the classroom.
Yeah.
Apparently, it had been on display for some time. And this is my thing, Jeanette. You know, again, listen, I'm a center-right person. I don't force my politics on anybody. I don't bring politics into the classroom. But what we've seen for years, if not decades, is somehow the playbook of the left has been to indoctrinate students at all levels of education. Obviously, we know it's been happening on our college campuses. But sadly and tragically, it's filtering down into our high schools, into our middle schools,
mm-hmm.
and clearly it's filtering into our elementary schools. And that's not teaching, Jeanette. That's indoctrination. And quite frankly, I think those professors or teachers are doing an immense disservice to our kids. Your thoughts tonight.
Yeah, no, and I would agree. I keep hearing of these stories more and more. You know, just on Chasing News a couple of weeks ago, we did a story about a student at the high school level who was denied admission to the National Honor Society because he was a supporter of President Trump and had posted on his Facebook page some, you know, pro-Make America Great Again posts. and that he was denied admission to the National Honor Society, not based on his grades, not based on anything else, not his extracurricular activities, but based on, leadership criteria, or character criteria. The advisor had said that he didn't display character criteria, in her opinion, because he had posted some divisive posts, and she referenced the pro-Trump post. Now, this is the president of our United States. I mean, make America great again is not a divisive statement by any means, in my opinion. Now, listen, I'm a Republican. I'm a moderate Republican. I don't always support our president. There are many things in which I disagree with him. However, I mean, what kind of country do we live in where you can't openly support our president? I mean, to me, that's insane. That's absolutely crazy. And, you know, just the other day in Somerset County, which is not too far from where I live, an elderly man was wearing a Make America Great Again hat, and he was attacked out in ShopRite. I mean, so you know, you have intolerance in the schools by educators, and you have, you know, acts of violence against elderly people. It's a really scary, polarized world that we're living in. And, you know, you talked earlier about the 25th anniversary of the Internet, which makes me feel terribly old because I remember before the times before the Internet. But, you know, I kind of think social media takes a lot of the blame for this, because I think we're more polarized and more divided than ever on social media. I think that plays a big role in it, because people are so, you know, you're hidden behind your screen, and there's so much hate and there's so much anger out there. We're not talking to each other. We're talking at each other. So I think your comments about civil discourse just being missing in our country right now or just really hit the nail on the head, Fernando.
Well, thank you, Jenna. And one of the things that really upsets me, and I talk about this, I tend to talk about it with some of my colleagues who are rational, is I think there's sort of a misnomer that exists out there that, for whatever reason, that the polarizing political climate we've lived in or are living in right now happens to be only because of the existence of the last couple of years. And I would strongly disagree. I mean, listen, for as much as people want to blame the president for anything, the problem is this, that I think that a lack of discourse has preceded Donald Trump. I think we've been living in this for many, many years prior to Donald Trump. I think that, to your point about social media, I mean, listen, I know that a couple of weeks ago there was a great documentary on CNN, which is weird because it's really never just programming on CNN to begin with. But I happened to catch a good documentary talking about the 15th anniversary of Facebook. And certainly social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter, who are, again, only 15 to maybe 10 years old, respectively, have really taken over the political discourse. It's given all of us a voice, mm-hmm. whether we like it or not. You know, we post at any time. And it just seems that this sort of toxicity in our political climate, though, Jeanette, I would just argue that it existed way before Donald Trump. You know, and the idea that somehow Donald Trump, you know, destroyed the social fabric of this country the moment he got elected is just an outright lie. You know, there have been plenty of examples to point out that the social fabric has been ruined long before the president ever took office. So I think it's really misleading, especially in academia. I think it's misleading in pop culture. I think it's misleading in our cable news cycle, where this idea that, oh, well, for whatever reason, you know, a lack of decorum or a lack of civility, you know, didn't exist during Barack Obama. Of course it did. It existed during George W. Bush, too. It just depends on where you read your material. And it's frustrating to me that it seems that, oh, well, only within the last 3 years that because of the presence of Donald Trump in our political arena that somehow, you know, a lack of civility became present. No, that's not true, Jeanette. It's happened way before Donald Trump. And I'm mystified that people don't see that.
You're absolutely right. I would argue that President Trump is a result of the media landscape changing. You know, the reason why he was elected is because our country is so divided, and that's because the media landscape has changed to, you know, play to those dynamics. You know, I came up in politics in the late 1990s when it was all print media, right? And, you know, it was all broadcast television. There were no cable news networks. I think MSNBC just started around then in like 1996, mm-hmm. 1997, you know, Fox News too, and that was about it. You know, Drudge Report, I think, was the only online news station. So you know, all the journalism back in those days were, it was print journalism. All the stories were really well researched. It was really thoughtful. You know, fast forward to now, you know, everything, it's all clickbait journalism, right? It's get the story out, get it out quick. You know, the leading cable news stations and cable news programs are either far left or far right. You know, the number one TV show, a cable TV show in the nation is Hannity. The number two is Maddow. So you're either, you know, talking to one side of the aisle or you're talking to the left. You're not talking to the middle. No one is talking to the middle. You know, and our social media is just the same way. We, you know, we self-select who we're going to follow, who we're going to talk to. We're not changing anyone's minds when we're having these conversations. We're talking to people who think like us. We're talking to people in our same echo chamber. So, you know, I once saw a you know, graphic on Facebook that somebody posted. It's like, you know, when you have an argument with someone on Facebook, you know, whose minds do you actually change? And it's like, no one, you know, nobody's mind is changed on a Facebook argument about politics, right? I mean, you're talking to people who either believe you or and agree with you and reinforce your arguments and opinions, or someone who's going to unfriend you or unfollow you, right? I mean, That is just the world we live in, and I think it's the right and the left to blame, and I think it's the media. I mean, the way these cable news stations have their pundits, you know, you're not going to find somebody who's on one of these stations, a Republican, you know, chastising the president for not working with Nancy Pelosi. They would never be invited back to Fox News, right?
Sure.
and vice versa on Rachel Maddow. So, you know, that is not civil discourse, what we're seeing on some of these cable news stations and what we're seeing on social media. That's, you know, that's the opposite. And it reinforces the polarization of our country, right? And why we're so divided. So, you know, this is not the result of the president. The president is a result of our divided politics.
Now, listen, that's a great narrative right there. Folks, if you just join us right now, it's 8:30 on the East Coast here on Blog Talk Radio. It's my pleasure to have your politically direct public affairs consultant and a really, you know, a great conservative commentator on My Nine, Chase New Jersey. You can check her out online. The great Jeanette Hoffman joins us here on the show. And Jeanette, we'll get back to the national scene in a minute, but I don't know about you. On Tuesday, I was on campus before my afternoon class, and I was happy to have my iPad on. And thankfully, I had a very light lunch. Otherwise, I think I would have lost my lunch. But I had a chance to catch a little bit of Governor Murphy's budget address. And listen, I don't want to sound bombastic here. I don't want to sound like I'm engaging in hyperbole. But, you know, as a homeowner and a taxpayer, Jeanette, I don't know about you. I don't want to speak for you or anybody else listening tonight. But I was demoralized once again. I'm looking at what this governor is advocating for in the new budget. And listen, this might not be a popular opinion to some people, but to some extent, thank goodness for State Senate President Steve Sweeney and Assembly Speaker Coughlin. I think that, you know, there are a lot of people in New Jersey, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, conservatives, progressives, whatever you want to call it, that are probably privately cheering for the State Senate President and the Assembly Speaker to maybe kind of rein in the governor, because I don't know about you, I listened to a good portion of the speech, and then I did my own homework, and I've been looking at articles since Tuesday, you know, prepping for your appearance, and I don't know, Jeanette, I'm horrified, but anything that really concerned you about the budget that didn't sit well with you?
Pretty much the whole budget,
yeah.
Fernando.
Sure.
I mean, but you know, look, it's more of the same for Governor Murphy, and look, that's what he campaigned on. I mean, this is who he is. He said he was going to raise taxes and he was going to increase spending and he was going to pay for these liberal programs. I don't think that's what New Jersey wants. You know, the people I talk to, and they're not just Republicans or suburban Democrats or, you know, mainstream,
sure,
normal, you know, voters, taxpayers. We live in the most expensive state in the country. Nothing is getting more affordable here. Our taxes keep going up, and we're not getting any services out of it. You know, name the spending programs that are benefiting me, normal, you know, middle-class person. We're just not getting it. Roads aren't getting any better.
Jeanette, I'm sorry to cut you off. I mean, they're benefiting illegals, maybe. You know, that's one demographic.
Right. Citizens of other countries might be getting benefits, but New Jersey taxpayers are not getting the benefits. I mean, look, my property taxes aren't going down, right? New Jersey Transit, that is just a nightmare. The roads, look, I traveled the parkway today. I was ready to pull my hair out, and it's insane how bad the potholes and the roads, and that, you know, they're not getting any better. So the services are terrible, and our taxes are going up, and I think the majority of New Jersey voters just want to say, not $1 more, Phil Murphy. We don't want to pay it. And, you know, I hear from Democrats saying, but what's wrong with taxing millionaires? Well, first of all, it's not your money. It's not government's money to take. Okay, why don't we cut spending? You know, the government just spends more money than we're taking in. That is a problem. The Senate president, and I like how you said you're saying thank God for the Senate president. I mean, you know, look, I'm a Republican, and I'm grateful that we have Senate President Sweeney and Assembly Speaker Coughlin to say let's take a pause here and really see, you know, if we need this millionaire's tax. I mean, because if you come for the millionaires and you don't get the revenue that you expected, because that always happens, because, you know, millionaires are a mobile population. They can move. They all usually have multiple homes. And look, I'll spend an extra couple weeks in Florida, so I don't have to pay that income tax in New Jersey. That's a pretty logical solution. So if you don't get that revenue from millionaires, who do they come after next? Do they come after half millionaires? Do they come after the middle class? What tax increase are they going to think up next? So, you know, Steve Sweeney is a Senate president, and he's working with a bipartisan coalition called Paths to Progress. They've outlined some common sense spending reforms, structural spending reforms, to address the pension and health benefit system in New Jersey, which is a huge cost driver. It drives like a third of the entire budget every year. So they're proposing some real structural spending reforms, like simple things like taking, you know, the state health benefits from, instead of a platinum plan, let's take it down to a gold plan, right? Still like a really great health benefit plan for state employees. You know, 90% of your health benefits are paid by state taxpayers, right? You only have to pay like 10%, which is pretty good, right? So they're proposing that, and that would save $500 million. That would eliminate the need for tax increases. So that's on the table with the legislature. I know there are a lot of other spending reforms proposed. I mean, I think that's the direction we need to go in, and fortunately, I think that's where the legislature is headed. Whether Governor Murphy is going to see the light of day and wake up and realize that by June 30th, that remains to be seen. But I just thought the whole budget address was a little tone deaf.
To me, you know, and one of the things that really stood out for me, and this is something where, and we talked off the air before the show, when the governor has been so adamant about revenues and how to create new revenues, and certainly, you know, this is why he's so insistent on marijuana legalization. And this is where the governor really pisses me off, because, you know, and I mentioned this on my program before, a lot of my audience probably knows this, but before I started working in academia as a college professor teaching in the social sciences, I worked in our criminal justice system, Jan, for 10 years. I worked as a probation officer,
right,
and also a criminal investigator, respectively, for the different. So I got to work in two very, you know, voluminous jails, both Hudson County and Essex County. All right. So I got to work with people that were, incarcerated. I certainly got to work with a lot of black and brown people that were being wrongly incarcerated for low-level drug offenses, such as marijuana. So the idea that, you know, and this is where I knew it was going to happen, and I've had some different advocates on the show. I mean, it took the governor and the legislature almost a full calendar year to address the minimum wage, which we can all argue is probably the easier of the two things to address.
Oh, sure.
And subsequently,
yeah,
obviously the governor has to cave, and instead of just raising it to $15 right away, you know, per Speaker Coughlin's plan, obviously we're seeing small increments to sort of not, you know, to sort of brace small businesses.
Well, it's still going to break small businesses, but that's a whole other issue. Get me started on that one. But anyway.
No. Well, absolutely. And we'll deal with that later for sure. I definitely want you to talk about minimum wage. But, you know, it took a full calendar to do something which I would argue seems simpler along policy lines. And now about marijuana, it just seems that the governor's so fixated on revenue. How about fixing the problem that exists in our jails, in, you know, criminal justice reform? The idea that, you know, decriminalizing marijuana should be addressed first and foremost. And I understand that State Senator Ronald Rice, along with State Senator Senator Brown up here in Hudson County, and Ronald Rice, respectively, in Essex County, introduced a bill on the Senate floor trying to sort of address the issues about decriminalization. It's just sitting there. I mean, that's
right.
A big word the legislature needs to really be addressing this. Because, again, and listen, and I deal with college kids every day, Jeanette. The idea that if tomorrow one of my kids gets arrested for having, you know, a small amount of marijuana. Listen, no one's talking about, like, if an officer has probable cause and they search their vehicle and there's pounds upon pounds of marijuana. That's a different story. I mean, we're talking about full trafficking here, okay? But if we're talking about a college student that has a small amount of marijuana on him or her, okay, number one, they're going to get arrested in New Jersey. They're going to be incarcerated for a certain amount of days. They're going to, you know, have to plead guilty and probably sent to probation, some sort of pretrial intervention. They're going to be issued an enormous amount of fines. And guess what, Jeanette? They can't pay those fines. Why? Because they can't work, because no one's going to hire them because of a low-level drug offense. And it becomes this vicious circle that encompasses our criminal justice system. And that's what I think the governor and the legislature need to be focusing in on. I think that right now we're seeing nationwide that the numbers aren't exactly always comparable. There isn't this guarantee of revenue. I mean, right now, you said it before, the idea that Governor Murphy's, you know, prognostication about tax revenue coming in has fallen short, right? So
right.
Leading up to that, okay, who's to say that it's not going to happen with marijuana revenue? So, you know, let's get it right.
You're right.
Let's decriminalize it. Let's expunge records for men and women that have been either wrongly incarcerated for this, they're currently serving time in our state prisons. And you know what? Get them working. You want to boost the economy, get these people working. Allow them to seek employment, to better their lives. But the governor just seems fixated on revenue. And guess what? It's just to spend. That's not good governing, Jeanette. That's just my opinion. Your thoughts, please.
No, I would agree with you. But do you remember when Governor Murphy was campaigning and when he gave his inauguration speech, he said, you know, marijuana legalization is about nothing more than social justice. That's the most important thing, social justice. Yet if it was about social justice, why hasn't decriminalization passed? And then, you know, when the decriminalization bill was introduced by Senator Rice and even Senator Singer, who's a Republican, signed on to it, so it's bipartisan, there's no reason it wouldn't be passed, they said, well, that wouldn't get rid of the black market. But, you know, Fernando, they're talking about taxing this at like $43 per ounce. Do you think that that's going to, you know, help the black market go away? Not at all. I mean, people are going to still be going to their dealers with that high tax level. That's absolutely crazy. And when the taxes are that high, you're not going to get the revenue. I mean, it's crazy to think you're going to generate the tax revenue that Governor Murphy, I think he has $80 million planned in the budget. And then, you know, the other thing is just that, you know, there's so many other issues that, you know, you have to take into account with legalized marijuana. If it's just a social justice issue, the reason why they're not passing decriminalization is the cannabis industry doesn't benefit from decriminalization. Do you know how much money that the cannabis industry has spent on lobbying in New Jersey? I mean, they are the next big tobacco in this country. And if you don't believe it, look at those lobbying reports. It's absolutely crazy.
Sure.
You know, this is not about, you know, some person growing a weed plant. I mean, they're spending money on edibles. They're advertising. I mean, just go out to Colorado. I mean, the billboards for gummy bears and sodas. And, you know, to me, all these things look like they're targeting children too, which is a whole nother issue and really disturbing. So I have a lot of issues with the way, you know, they're trying to legalize marijuana in New Jersey. And look, none of this has to, right now, to me, none of this has to do with social justice, unfortunately.
Oh, I agree with you. And listen, you know, and it's interesting because I've had callers call into the show. I've had other guests, you know, appear. And I've always been very adamant about this. Like, I don't have a dog in this fight, Jeanette. You know, I don't smoke marijuana. I never have. I don't care to. Like, as a matter of fact, after the show tonight, I'm going to have a nice glass of Malbec, relax, screen some papers, and you know, just, you know, that's my way of decompressing. Now, if you like to engage in cannabis, God bless you. Go ahead, you know, whatever floats your boat. But my concern is just the idea that, and you used a great word the other day when we talked off the air. It just seems, and I've met the governor. I've gone to enough events where I've met the governor. I've been able to talk with him for a few minutes. He's a very nice guy. He's very charming. He's very likable. But it just seems that on issues like this, and also the idea that New Jersey continues to be unaffordable and somehow it's Washington's fault. It just reminds me that he's tone deaf on this. He really is tone deaf. And it reminds me because, and I'll sort of throw the scenario at you, but listen, last fall during the midterm elections, you know, all but one congressional district in New Jersey remained Republican. Every other one in New Jersey either stayed Democrat or turned blue. And one of the things that was hysterical to me, listening to talking points, that's almost from the governor's part, but, you know, Democrats in New Jersey, but this idea, Jeanette, that, oh, well, the reason New Jersey is expensive and the reason that New Jersey is becoming unaffordable is, well, you have to blame Washington and you have to blame what's going on in D.C. No, Jeanette, newsflash to people in New Jersey. The Democrats have run the legislature for nearly a generation, okay? The idea that taxes are the highest in the country, okay? The idea that the cost of living in New Jersey could be used to skyrocket. Newsflash to people listening tonight. This precedes Donald Trump. This precedes Barack Obama. This probably even precedes George W. Bush in office in the White House. The problem is in Washington. The problem has been and will continue to be Trenton. And again, newsflash to people in New Jersey. I understand, well, you know, before Governor Murphy had 8 years of Chris Christie, and then before that we had John Corzine. At the end of the day, Jeanette, it's the Democrats that have run the legislature. It's the Democrats that have introduced budgets, voted on spending, they've introduced policies to increase spending. So the idea that, oh, well, New Jersey is expensive to live in, we have the highest property tax in the country, that's not Donald Trump's fault. That's not a Republican Congress's fault.
Right.
That's the Democratic legislature's fault. And I just don't understand how people fall for this nonsense narrative. And again, I'm not an economist, okay? I'm someone who takes a lot of pride in my graduate degrees and being, you know, a pretty forward-thinking type of academic. But my God, you know, it doesn't take a PhD in political science to realize that the problem in New Jersey and what's going on here is in Washington, it's Trenton. I don't understand why people don't see that, Jeanette.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, Trenton has done nothing to address the skyrocketing property tax issue, except with the exception of Governor Christie's 2% cap, which is, you know, a little bit of a Band-Aid approach, but at least it's something, right? But, you know, it's interesting to me, some polling data that I've seen recently. I mean, number one is the Monmouth University poll a couple of weeks ago that said the quality of life index in New Jersey is at the lowest satisfaction level ever, right? I mean, people are just miserable. But it's funny because when you talk to, you know, Governor Murphy's people and some Democrats will say to you, but minimum wage polls really well and the millionaire's tax polls really well. And, you know, but when you take those policies, right, and you pull them in isolation, sure, people are like, okay, yeah, sure, you know, raise the minimum wage, give people a raise with other people's money. I don't care. That's fine. Sure. But, you know, if you also pull ice cream, that pulls well, too. But does it affect people's daily life? Does it affect their commute? Does it affect whether they can afford to live here and send their kids to school here? No. These are like pie-in-the-sky things. Sure, they're nice, right? But it doesn't impact people's daily lives. They're not their number one, two, and three priorities, like property taxes, education, NJ Transit, things like that. Those are the things, the number one, two, and three priorities that Trenton has just totally failed at addressing. The number two polling data that I've seen, and this is kind of an internal thing that I've heard people talk about, the SALT deduction. People don't really understand that is the president's fault or, you know, Washington's fault, and they kind of just blame Murphy because they think he's just taxing everything. So I would say that the reason there's so much blame for Washington and the president is that Murphy's trying to get away from that and trying to educate people that, hey, that's not my problem, you guys. So I think that's kind of funny. But yes, to your point, you know, Trenton takes a huge, and the Trenton Democrats, since 2003, they have held the majority, and, you know, they haven't taken control of this property tax issue of, you know, the pension issue. And look, you know, I have family members that I love dearly that have a pension, and I don't want to see that go away from them because, you know, they paid into it. They were promised a pension, and Trenton has failed to live up to their obligation. However, you know, if we're going to save the pension, we need to, you know, reform it. I really think that, you know, the Path to Progress that I talked about before, it's a bipartisan group. I think they have some good ideas that are worth considering. I think just reforms need to be made because it's at some point it's going to be unsustainable and it's going to be devastating for people who have, you know, who are vested into it and they're going to lose their pensions. So I think we really have a moral obligation to reform it so we can save it for the people who are in the system.
No, listen, you're absolutely right on that. And so the point you made before about when then-candidate Phil Murphy was running, certainly, listen, he didn't lie to us. He told us exactly what the blueprint was going to be. And when he got elected by a pretty large margin, and again, listen, it was a pretty low voter turnout. I think we can make the case. And this is where I know you're a very dedicated Republican, Jeanette, but I want to get your thoughts on this. And one of the things that I would argue produced Phil Murphy, or at least produced his candidacy in subsequent elections, is the idea that, you know, I remember 10 years ago when then former attorney, you know, U.S. Attorney Chris Christie was running for office against then incumbent John Corzine. And I've had the chance to meet Chris Christie. You know, I've had the chance to talk to former Governor Christie. And, you know, listen, there are things that I like about the governor. We're both dedicated and devoted Cowboys fans, so I can relate to him on that. We've had some funny conversations.
I am a Cowboys fan.
There you go. All right. You see, I knew I liked
him. I can join your club.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think one of the biggest disservices that Chris Christie did, though, Jeanette, is I think he kind of put himself ahead of the Republican Party. And I think that slowly but surely we saw that materialize in the fact that during his 8 years, not one Republican was able to win a legislative seat during those 8 years. And I just think that the governor, because of having national aspirations, never really put the party on his back here in New Jersey. And you know what? I know Kim Guadagno. I met her on a few occasions when I ran the state assembly 8 years ago. She was great to come up to Hudson County to a fundraiser where myself and other assembly candidates were congregating and fundraising. And she was great. I felt awful for her, though, Jeanette, because 2 years ago when she ran, I knew it was just a hopeless battle for her because Governor Christie's stock had just plummeted so badly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he did such a disservice to the Republican Party in New Jersey that I just knew that, you know what, Murphy's going to win this hands down, and Kim is just going to be a sacrificial lamb for the party. And I feel bad for her because she's a good woman. She was a good lieutenant governor. She's a great person. And she didn't deserve what happened to her. And partly I think a lot of why we have Phil Murphy is I blame Chris Christie. And again, this is not to sound salty against the former governor, but the best hypothesis I can come up with in terms of why we have Phil Murphy. And I think that, you know, it's sort of like the chickens came home to roost politically when, you know, Governor Christie just did such an awful job towards the latter half of the second term that, quite frankly, I think it just turned people off, and we got Phil Murphy as a result. Am I looking at this the wrong way?
No, I definitely see your point. First, let me just say what a big fan I am of Kim Guadagno. She's a good friend. I actually just saw her this morning. We taped a show on Channel 9 for New Jersey Now on Women's History Month, which is going to air on March 17th. So if you're not celebrating St. Patrick's Day, check it out. but she would be – talk about what a fantastic governor she would be right now. We would be hearing such a different tone from Trenton. I actually think she could tackle the affordability problems that we're having right now in our state. She is just such a wonderful person, such a charismatic leader, and just common sense, smart, just get it done kind of person. And I think she has a bright future ahead of herself, and I wouldn't rule out a future statewide run for her. So that being said, you know, politics is all about timing for her, and it wasn't the right time. And yeah, Chris Christie, running for president hurt him and hurt the Republican Party in New Jersey. The entire focus of the Republican state party was on him, and didn't go to the legislative races. I will also say that, though, the redistricting also hurt the Republican Party for the legislative races, we were just not able to pick up seats the way the map was drawn. However, we shouldn't have lost seats, and we did lose some seats, especially in my home county of Monmouth. We lost some assembly seats and the Senate seat that we shouldn't have lost, and unfortunately, I don't think we'll get them back anytime soon. But, you know, politics is cyclical in New Jersey. I don't think we're a red state or a blue state on the state level. I think we kind of swing back and forth. We're purple, right? We had Corzine, sure. Then we had, you know, Christie. Now we have Murphy, and I think we're going to go back to a Republican after Murphy. I think people are going to say, all right, this, we need to go back to some common sense fiscal, you know, conservatives. Let's start to rein this back in. But I think we like our politicians middle of the road, middle of the road, socially moderate, right? Like you know, like sure. Christy Whitman was, you know, Jim McGreevy, Chris Christie, John Corzine. They're all kind of middle of the road, I'd say. You know, Corzine and Murphy are pretty liberal, but I think Phil Murphy is way too liberal for most New Jerseyans. But I think his timing was he was not Chris Christie and he was not Donald Trump. So, you know, timing is everything in politics. And he got in at the right time. And I think the mistake he's making now is thinking that he has this massive mandate, right? That, you know, voters want this. Voters want driver's license for people who are not here legally and free community college for people who are citizens of other countries and, you know, all these crazy social programs and higher taxes and, you know, $2 billion in new taxes and spending. I don't think New Jerseyans want that. I think we want common sense government. I think we want New Jersey Transit running. I think we want lower taxes or at least taxes not to go up for a year for a change, right?
I
think – he's going to look, his poll numbers are not great right now. Like I said, the quality of life index is pretty low. And, you know, I think he's going to learn in this budget cycle that there's.
I mean, Jeanette, I hate to cut you off. But I mean, I looked at that Monmouth poll a couple weeks ago where it said he was at 43%. I said, first of all, who do they poll? Illegals? His family? Like his staff? I mean, how the hell did that high?
Right. Well, that was generous.
Yeah, listen, folks, I'm not trying to be funny. I'm not trying to, like, you know, do a comedy act here tonight, but it's a really high number. And when I saw that, Jeanette, I said, wait a minute, who the hell did they poll? Like, are you crazy? I mean, I'm looking at, again, we're looking at the property taxes that still have not been addressed. And we're looking at this budget that I believe spending went up in it. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but I mean, you might have it, you might know it before I do, but. Again, and I mean, looking at whether it's just the spending, it just seems like the governor, to your point, again, it's a great word to use the other day with me off the air. It just seems like he's tone deaf when it comes to looking at spending. And
yeah,
listen, when we look at the state senate president, we look at the assembly speaker. It was funny. I was watching the speech. I was looking at them in the background sitting there, you know, in their customary seats. And I'm looking at Sweeney's face, I'm looking at Coughlin's face, and the first thing I'm thinking of is like, oh, my God, these guys are sitting there thinking like, oh, God. You know, they had this look on their face, Jeanette. I was just laughing. I'm like, my God, they're sitting there thinking, this guy is going to bankrupt us. This guy,
well,
I don't know
what
it is.
Well, and it's funny because...
Go on, I'm sorry.
The Assembly Speaker's got to get through an election this year, right? So whatever Murphy does, he has to defend for his assembly candidates. That's going to be in all the mail pieces. So he's, you know, he doesn't want to put any of this in the state budget. So he has to own it. So I, you know, I think they're going to fight tooth and nail any broad-based income taxes. It's funny because, you know, you used to have Republicans in the legislature to fight these things, and now we're having Democratic leaders fighting back. And you were Republicans too. They'll fight, but unfortunately, there are less and less of them these days.
No, certainly. Absolutely. Folks, it's 8:50 here on the East Coast. If you're just joining us right now here on Blog Talk Radio, it's my pleasure to have you on the show, Public Affairs Consultant, and she's a regular on My 9 and on Chiefs in Jersey. Philly, the great Jeanette Hoffman joins us here on Politically Direct. Jeanette, we'll get back to politics in a minute, but, you know, one of the things that maybe our audience isn't aware of is you're such a busy career woman, and certainly, you know, during Women's History Month, we honor all the accomplishments of women and certainly the struggles that they face, whether it was suffrage to everything, whether it comes to equal pay, to equality in the workforce. But one of the things that really is astounding about me, you know, that astounds me about you, though, Jeanette, and it's really admirable, is you find time to balance a very busy family life. You're a working mother, and you are someone that is very reputable across the state. What got you? What was your epiphany? Whether it was in college or maybe an internship, but what was your epiphany when you realized, you know what, I want to work in politics, and this is what I want to do for a living? At what point in your life did that hit you?
You know, I've always been interested in politics. I grew up in a sort of political family. My grandfather was involved in, like, local politics and ran for mayor and board of education and things like that. But I always took an interest in it, and I was a communications and political science minor. I was communications major, political science minor at Trenton State College, now the College of New Jersey. And in my senior year, I was lucky enough to intern for Governor Whitman, New Jersey's first woman governor. Talk about Women's History Month. And I was lucky enough to be in the State House every day in my senior year of college. So when I was graduating, I was offered a full-time job in Governor Whitman's office. And it just, I fell in love with it. I fell in love with working in politics and talking to people, and just really loved the process. Was fascinated by how every day was something completely different. The issues were always changing. The policies were always changing. And certainly loved the news side, loved the media side. And that's kind of the direction that I took with politics as a media consultant and someone who appears on, you know, TV and radio and things like that. So that kind of, you know, sparked me from a young age in college. So I would, you know, certainly encourage all your students, Professor, to try out as many internships as possible. I think it's just a great way to figure out what you want to do. And I was lucky to figure it out and work for a really inspiring woman. We talked about it today, actually, on My Nine on New Jersey Now. And speaking of Women's History Month, if you wouldn't mind me giving another plug, on March 16th, which is next Saturday, the Center for American Women in Politics, they're putting on a great program called Ready to Run. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's at Rutgers University.
I'm familiar. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's a campaign training program for any woman who's interested in running for office, or maybe not running just yet, but just kind of learning about the political process or getting involved in advocacy or lobbying or just politics in general. It's like a day-long session. You just hear from awesome different speakers. You can hear about learning how to fundraise, which can be really challenging for women if you haven't done it. You can learn about advocacy, about how to lobby. So I'm doing a session with Janine LaRue, who's a Democrat with Kaufman Zeta Group. She's a fantastic advocate. We're talking about advocacy. So I'll be there at 2:30 that day. But anybody who's interested should just check out that website. It's COAWP, C-A-W-P. I think it's COAWP. COAWP.org, but I'll shoot you an email if you want to send it over to your students.
Yes, I'll definitely share it with my students. I'll definitely plug it on the page, Jeanette. And again, listen, you know what you do is so admirable because you know you exemplify today's working woman and working mom. I mean, you are able to balance your time between a very busy career. I know you're a dedicated mom, and so I want to give a shout out to your husband because one of the things that, and we talked about this off the air, you know, I know Josh from some years ago when I used to do local media in Hudson County, and I know that he was working up here in Hudson County in Jersey City government. And it's just funny because it reminds me very much of the Mary Madeline, Jim Carville dynamic. I know that you guys ideologically are not on the same page. And it's really
right.
Interesting. I think, and especially for our listeners tonight, especially for the couples listening tonight, that you know, sometimes, you know, listen, politics becomes divisive in a household. So, you know, any advice you can give for couples tonight or just in general, because you know that, listen, Josh is a Democrat for sure, but he's a very middle-of-the-road guy.
Oh, yeah.
From what I remember, Joshua Bean. He's not like a radical Bernie Sanders, you know, Ocasio-Cortez fanatic that I know. But
thank
I
God,
remember
no.
He was very middle-of-the-road. I know, thank goodness. I remember him being very middle-of-the-road. I remember him just being they're just very center left, and that's fine. You know, just like I anticipate you being center right, But like, how does that dynamic work? Because I'm sure, you know, listen, we've seen for decades, you know, the very famous couple at the national level, but we know that even in our day-to-day, you know, couples sometimes struggle with politics. It's a divisive topic for sure, right?
Oh, yeah, and especially, you know, actually recently with this budget cycle, we totally see different – we have totally different opinions on it. But you know what? I think the fact that we can talk about it and have different opinions and, you know, we constantly all day share information with each other and refute each other's facts. And I think it makes us better at our jobs, really, because, I can debate with anybody because I debate at home all the time and I hear the other side of the argument all the time. But, you know, look, we don't make it personal. We know where the other one's coming from, and at the end of the day, we have more in common than not. I mean, we both respect each other. I mean, we met through politics, and I love that he cares so much about the issues, and, you know, the same with him. Really the most divisive thing, though, is that he's a Mets fan and I'm a Yankees fan, so I mean, I don't know how we're gonna get past that.
Oh my god.
Yeah,
so you're a Yankee, so you're like me, you're a Yankee fan and a Cowboy fan, Jeanette?
And a Cowboys fan, and he's a Mets fan and a Giants fan. So this is like a total mixed marriage.
Brutal. Mm-hmm. Brutal. My God. Josh, I still love you, man, but I just know about the teams, Josh. I'm just joking. Jeanette, and really I think it's inspiring because, you know, and it sort of takes us back to one of the topics we started the program tonight with, is the idea that sometimes, you know, it's become so toxic when it comes to talking about politics. I mean, listen, this is – and it's funny in my family. Like, my dad, who listens to the show religiously, is a very old-school conservative guy. He's very much a fan of the president. He certainly enjoys a lot of the entertainment value that the president provides because of his bravado and his, at times, lack of decorum, which, you know, I have an issue with often, you know, in the sense of his behavior. And then we have my mom, who – my mom isn't very political at all. But my mom can't stand the president. And it's always funny when I hear them sort of go at it. And, you know, I sort of just sit there like as a referee and just laugh with them about sort of like the national political climate. But I think it lends itself to, again, just the fact that, you know, we live in a really polarizing time. And it just seems that, you know, you can't have a conversation lately where, you know, the wrong thing said out of context be construed as, oh, you're a MAGA hat wearer, or you're a Trumper, or you're a fascist, or you're a racist. Listen, I was having this conversation the other day, Jeanette, and I said to one of my colleagues, I said, listen, number one, I'm looking forward to the debates in June when NBC broadcasts them, whether it's 15 to 20 Democrats. I'm going to sit there I might have to go to Costco and get a really big bucket of popcorn because I want to sit there and watch that circus, right? What the debate's going to look like.
I'll join you.
You know, but more so, and I said this to my colleagues, I said, listen, if we're going to be intellectually honest today, I said to them, short of some economic catastrophe, short of some foreign policy fail or some disaster that hits the homeland, you know, unemployment remains down for different demographics. And for a lot of people, Jeanette, listen, here in New York, in the New York area, in California, you know, left-wing politics, that's written for people. That's nothing new. That's nothing to brag about. But the president and the economy continues the way it does, and we're seeing foreign policy wins, such as ISIS being weakened on a daily basis, for example. And if the Democratic Party keeps moving far, far more to the left, and they don't have a candidate that can sort of resonate with middle-of-the-road voters or moderates, I'm sorry, and I hate to burst people's bubbles tonight, and this doesn't make me a Trump fanatic. It doesn't make me, a right-wing crazy. It makes me intellectually honest. It sounds like the president's going to get reelected. Now, that can happen between now and next year, but based on this current course, based on the GDP, based on job growth, based on the fact that unemployment's down, again, and we're seeing the Democratic Party move more and more to the left. I don't know. I just – Democrats can't give people in the Midwest a candidate that's maybe middle of the road. No offense to people tonight. The president's going to get reelected, Jeanette. And I know that's a big pill to swallow for a lot of people. But, again, the way I'm designed this blueprint, I think is realistic. Though, what are your thoughts about my outlook?
I right now, if everything stays the same, I think it's accurate. I think identity politics is killing the Democratic Party. I think they need an adult in the room to come in. I think that's Joe Biden. If Joe Biden runs, that's a game changer. But the way this primary is shaking out now, I think moderate mainstream Democrats, I don't think they have a candidate there for them right now. I think they're all trying to out Bernie Sanders each other right now in this field.
Oh, God.
And I can't even imagine what the next debate looks like with this, all these crazy things that they're proposing. I mean, they're trying to outlept each other with this new Green Deal and everything like that. I think it's just nonsense. No one's talking about the jobs and the economy, and that's what real voters want to hear.
Well, and that's the frustrating thing, because it trickles down even in New Jersey, because and we're seeing it, whether it's on the marijuana issue, whether we're seeing it on the way that Attorney General Grewal is addressing the rights of illegals in New Jersey. And listen, let me tell you something, and I want to be very clear. You know, I am a son of immigrants, Jeanette. My parents left Cuba and Colombia respectively over 50 years ago. They came here legally. They did it the right way. They worked hard. They gave me a good
God
life.
Bless
they
them.
Taught me.
Yeah.
They taught me the value of a good work ethic. They taught me the importance of doing things the right way, going to school, making good life choices. And for that, I'm forever grateful to my parents. But this idea that it seems like the governor and the attorney general, and again, and this is not a racist comment, because I've opined on this on the podcast page. I've talked about this on the air many times. You know, the idea that when I've used the narrative that Governor Murphy and Attorney General Grewal are bending over backwards for illegals instead of taxpayers, that's not a racist statement. That's not bigoted, Jeanette. That's accurate. I want someone to tell me differently, though. If I'm wrong, I don't think I'm wrong on that, though.
No, look, there's a lot of rhetoric here, and I think the governor, the attorney general, the answers to the governor, I think they're playing a different game. Look, this is not for New Jersey taxpayers, this agenda. This is an anti-Trump agenda. They started it on day one. Look, the governor basically said in his inauguration speech, we're going to be the Trump resistance here in New Jersey. And how much, you know, I don't know if you've totaled up the amount of taxpayer dollars that have been spent on lawsuits against the Trump administration, but look, I mean, that's money that could have gone to New Jersey Transit. That's money that could have gone to property tax relief. But look, they have an agenda that is a national one, that's anti-Trump. I'm not sure if it's positioning Governor Murphy for higher office or for a cabinet level position, if a Democrat becomes president, I'm not really sure what it is. But it's not in the best interest of New Jersey taxpayers. You know, I think that's going to start. You know, you said he has a 43% approval rating. I think, you know, look, New Jersey voters haven't really been paying attention to a lot of this. I think these numbers are going to start. Are going to start coming down for Governor Murphy. I think people are going to start paying attention. And look, the New Jersey voters didn't like it when Chris Christie ran for higher office, and people thought he was, you know, getting too big and into national politics. I don't think they're going to like it when they realize that Governor Murphy's starting to do some of the same things.
Well, Jeanette, but the problem is that a lot of the outrage over Governor Christie at the time doesn't seem to be resonating now with our junior senator Cory Booker, who isn't in. Now, I get it. He's not going to be in New Jersey a lot anyway, because he's supposed to be in Washington, you know, in the Senate,
right,
voting on bills, supposedly. But I'm hoping that people are going to be outraged just as much about Cory Booker going to Iowa, going to New Hampshire, or South Carolina, instead of being in Washington for votes. I mean, I hope I see. I doubt it, because the toxicity sort of like reigns in. It's crazy in New Jersey. And something I wanted to bring to your attention, because I wanted to get your thoughts on this, and especially as a woman, and you know, something that really doesn't sit well with me, Jeanette. And I know that I was on TV a couple months back in January for a roundtable, and you know, I was very fortunate to be on the show with Michael Aaron, and not just once but twice.
Yeah, it's a great show. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, I love Michael. He's been on my podcast here twice, and before I go to a hearing later this month. But the last appearance I did on Reporters Roundtable happened to be the same day that the Kitty Brennan hearings were taking place in Trenton. So as we were taping the show live, the hearings were being televised as well. And I brought up this point, and I was really surprised that I didn't get cut off or didn't get cut out of the final edit. But I remember going on the air saying, you know, we were talking about the Katie Brennan situation, and it was right after, it was actually the week of the State of the State address. And I brought up on the air, and I said, you know, it's not that the governor, out of a 5,000-plus word speech, spent like 1,600 words talking about tax incentives and tax breaks. That he was sort of voicing concerns over, and not one word was uttered in terms of the Katie Brennan situation. Now I understand. I'm sure Attorney General Grewal probably said, "Listen, Governor, you know, you're currently under investigation. It's better you don't talk about this." But it was funny to me though, Jeanette, because last fall, all you heard, both statewide Democrats and many national Democrats, was this outrage about the Brett Kavanaugh situation. And sort of the he said, she said issues that he had with Professor Christine Blasey Ford. And all we heard from New Jersey Democrats, right? Governor Murphy, we heard from a lot of other prominent Democrats. We heard from Cory Booker, you know, Spartacus himself. We heard from other Democrats that you know, were adamant about, hey, we need to let the FBI do their work and hashtag believe her, hashtag believe women,
right.
Hashtag believe
all women.
And yet, yeah, and believe all women. And you know what? And I said this on the air. And today, we can hear a pin drop at the silence when it comes to where's the hashtag believe Katie? Where's hashtag believe women in New Jersey? Where's hashtag justice for Katie? You can hear a pin drop, Jeanette, in the state where, again, I don't know what, listen, we're never going to really know what happened that fateful night between Katie Brennan and Al Alvarez. I'm certainly looking forward to seeing Al Alvarez in person next week, in Trenton, appearing before the legislature. I think that'll be a very interesting sit down for him. But, you know, again, it just seems that there's this sort of hypocrisy in New Jersey that really, and as a woman, Jeanette, again, I don't know if you care to share your thoughts about the Katie Brennan situation, but that really didn't sit well with me. And I was happy because after the show, Michael Aaron went up to me and said, you know what, Fernando, good for you. That was a really good quote you said today. And you're right, there is a lot of hypocrisy. It just seems like it's engulfing a lot of our political culture here. Right, Jeanette?
Yeah, there really is. And it's so bizarre to me, the whole situation. I mean, the cover-up, I mean, the fact that, you know, Governor Murphy says he didn't know, and nobody told him. It just really, to me, is just so unbelievable. Or, you know, that Tammy Murphy didn't know. How could they not have known? You know, all these high level people so close to him. You know, the email that he sent her. You know, stay put, Katie. We're on it. He never followed up. He never asked anybody, hey, what did Katie Brennan want? You know, what was her email about that she needed to talk to me about? It defies logic. So we may never know what happened in that fateful night where she accused Al Alvarez of sexually assaulting her and why he got the position in state government after, you know, Katie Brennan had told people that she was sexually assaulted by him, and why the charges were dropped by the Hudson County prosecutor and the Middlesex County prosecutor, and were they, you know, told to make those charges go away? I don't know. There's a lot of things circulating out there. Seems like a lot of people want a lot of things to go away. I will say, thank goodness for Senator Loretta Weinberg, right? I mean, she's the only one who seems to be leading this charge with the legislative investigative hearings and subpoenaing high-level officials to come forward who none of them seem to remember anything, including who hired Al Alvarez. Now, hopefully he'll come forward and tell everybody who hired him. Maybe he'll say he hired himself. I'm not really sure. But, you know, another thing that strikes me about this case, Fernando, and maybe you can weigh in on it too, is why hasn't the national media picked up on this? I mean, I think you'll remember Bridgegate a couple years. This was all over everything. MSNBC, CNN, everywhere. I mean, they were covering this daily. They were, I was working on State Street at the time. They were news trucks in front of the State House every single day. This was national news. Now, Governor Murphy, you know, while he's not necessarily a presidential candidate at this time, you know, maybe he will be in the future, he is vice chair of the Democratic Governors Association. So he, you know, he does have somewhat of a national profile. You know, he is one of the most powerful governors in the nation by virtue of it being New Jersey. So why hasn't the national news picked up on the fact that a Democratic governor could potentially be covering up a sexual assault scandal in his administration? Why do Democrats not care about this sexual assault scandal? Why is no one standing up for Katie Brennan? It's just,
yeah,
to me as a woman, it's perplexing.
No, and what's preposterous too, though, is again, all we saw last fall was this sanctimonious outrage from Democrats statewide and many national Democrats about, well, we need to have the FBI investigate this thoroughly. We need to, you know,
right,
we need to believe women at all times. And all of a sudden, poor Katie Brennan's being thrown under the bus where, as you just said, there's no coverage about this. There is no outrage statewide. It just, and I mentioned it on the air, it seems like you can hear a pin drop in New Jersey about the silence. And this is where, and to your point about identity politics, this is where a lot of Democrats and this is where a lot of people on the left get themselves in trouble, because you act sanctimonious on one page, and just remember, it's going to come back to bite you in you know where. And that's what's happening. And I think this is why people, I think, ideologically sort of look at what's going on in New Jersey and are so skeptical. And as you mentioned before, maybe they're not paying attention. Maybe they're going to start paying attention more now. And it's sort of, and you brought up a point before about, I mean, listen, again, the budget's going to be the main issue between now and June 30th. And to your point, you know, just sort of get back to statewide politics for a moment. But the idea that, listen, all 80 assembly seats are on the line this November. Is this a chance for either, you know, whether it's Republicans, or is this a chance for maybe off-ballot candidates that maybe run as different types of Democrats to maybe steal some seats here, even during primaries? Because it seems that, you know, the budget is going to be a big issue leading up to June. You know, the primary is before the budget has to get signed. Let's be honest. Budget's never signed before the 30th. Sometimes it's almost at crunch time. Do you think this is something that could be immensely problematic, not just for the Assembly Speaker, but for all 80 Assembly seats?
I definitely think it's an issue that's not going to go away. I mean, let's see what's going to happen next week when Al Alvarez testifies. I mean, I don't know where this is going to go. And, you know, when investigations like these happen, there's always tentacles, right? Like, they start probing one area, and where does it lead, right? So they're going to interview Al Alvarez, but they said they weren't going to ask him about Katie Brennan, but they're going to ask him about the hiring practices of the School Development Authority where he works. And as you remember, there was a whole patronage scandal there. So does that
mm-hmm.
lead to somewhere else, right? So I think it's really interesting. I think that the Murphy administration is in a bit of trouble right now. So, you know, if I'm a Democrat in New Jersey in the legislature up for reelection, I'm not really thrilled with how my party is conducting itself right now. I'm not really thrilled with the budget that I've been dealt. I'm going to push my legislative leaders to hold the line on taxes when it comes to June 30th. And I don't think marijuana legalization is going to get done for that reason. Because, I don't,
no,
you know, look, in swing districts, I don't think higher taxes and legalizing drugs is going to be a popular issue. I really don't.
I agree with you. And I think we'll probably not even look at this issue until January of 2020 at the earliest. Folks, again, if you're just joining us right now, 9:15 on the East Coast here. We have for a few more minutes a lovely lady tonight. She's been such a sweetheart to give us so much of her time this evening. The great Jeanette Hoffman joins us here on Politically Direct. Jeanette, real quick, just before I let you go, a couple more things. Number one, if you sat across a table from Governor Murphy in a very succinct, concise way, what would you tell the governor today about what needs to get done before June 30th on this budget?
I would just ask him to really make affordability an issue and just really think twice about what he's doing here and think about ways to cut spending, because, listen, there were some really smart, smart people in the legislature. And I'll just say on the Republican side, I mean, our leaders, John Bramnick, Tom Kaine, they're really great guys. They're really smart. On the budget side, Steve Orjo and Declan O'Scanlan, they're two senators who really know what they're doing. They've really taken a look at this pension health benefit reform reform. They know some great ways to save some money and to really reform the issue so we can save the benefits for our state workers. So I would tell him that, look, it's not easy to live in New Jersey. It's not easy to raise a family. He's very wealthy. He's fortunate. I mean, he's made a lot of money in his career, but the rest of us aren't so fortunate, and we're struggling here. We're struggling to raise a family. We're struggling to pay our property taxes, to think of us and to try to make the state a little bit more affordable.
Any thoughts on running for public office, Jeanette? I know you're so busy. You balance the time between being a working mom. You're so heavily involved in politics, but does the itch come to maybe want to run for elected office anytime soon?
So I will never say never, but at the moment, no, that's not in my plans.
Okay.
I do have
okay.
four children.
Yes, no, I know. Listen, you have a beautiful family. Congrats to you and Josh. Certainly, again, do my best to Josh when you talk to him this evening.
I will.
But before I let you go, you know, this is the point of the show, Jeanette, where I want to thank you for your time. You've been an absolute sweetheart after a long working day to be on with me for over an hour. And I feel like I have you on for 3 hours and to get through everything. That's how good of a show it is.
Oh, my gosh. We'll have to do this again because this is so much fun. And the benefit
yeah,
of a podcast is that the benefit of a podcast is I can do it in my pajamas. So.
Yes, that's fantastic. But, again, this is a part of the show where, number one, again, I want to thank you for your time. For your insight, I think you have been you've provided a plethora of information tonight that I think has really been beneficial to our listeners. And this is where I give my guests the floor, because for the last hour we've had a great conversation, but I've been the one asking questions, I've been the one picking your brain. Now I give my guests the floor and say, hey, what do you got for me? You want to ask me something? You want to take me to task? The floor is yours. So Jeanette, as I do with all my guests, hit me with your best shot here tonight on Politically Direct.
Oh, Fernando, now you're putting me on the spot. No, I mean,
yeah,
I would
to.
Just – no, I mean, I think it's fantastic that you're talking to young people. And first of all, I think what you said in your opening is so right. I mean, what I'm seeing coming out of academia these days is just really terrifying and really scary. And, you know, the news stories on college campuses from all over the country about the intolerance and, you know, I mean, it's – These people, they just can't even tolerate certain speeches on campus and certain speakers, and they don't want conservatives on campus. I mean, I think it's great that you, you know, tell it like it is, and you're not trying to indoctrinate anyone to a certain persuasion. So I would encourage you to keep doing that. And, you know, I'm not sure if you have guest speakers, but, you know, I'd love to come talk to your class at some point. And I would encourage you to have... you know, folks from both sides of the aisle come in and talk. I don't know if you do that kind of thing, but it's always good to hear from both parties, I think.
No, definitely. And what I try to do, especially on this show, and what I try to do in the classroom too, is just give my students every side of an issue and let them make their own decision. And again, I try to do that here on the show. I want to thank you for coming on tonight. Jeanette, you've been, again, a wealth of information. As a personal favor to me, if you can, you know, do me a favor, let Bill Spadia know. I'd love to go contribute one day on Chasing and contributing to his show. He's a great guy. I follow stuff on Twitter all the time.
Yeah.
He's great. You know, I've reached out to him. I know he's very busy. I know he probably has a bunch of people always hitting him up to get on Chasing New Jersey. And but if he needs a young Latino college professor to come contribute to the program, please have him call me. I'd love to come on and contribute.
You would be terrific.
I really, yeah, well, thank you. And again, you know, if you can let him know that, I'm a big fan of his. I'd love to come on whenever he can have me. I'd love to contribute to the program. You do a great job on there. Sort of everybody that, you know, my good friend Matt Rooney's on there often. Big fan of Matt as well. I'm not a fan of him being an Eagles fan, but I mean, I look past that with Matt, you know.
Everybody has their weaknesses.
Exactly. But you give my hello to Bill. You know, let him know that, hey, if he ever needs me, you know, here Politically Direct with Insider NJ is always ready to answer the call. So, you know, give him my best. And again, Jeanette, congrats on everything you're doing. Keep up the good fight. You know, you are just a stand-up person doing great things every day. You know, again, we'll have you back on later this spring. But certainly, if you know, in advance, I want to wish you a happy Mother's Day, a happy Easter.
And, oh, thank you very much.
Happy rest of Women's History Month. Again, you're a shining example for women here in New Jersey, Jeanette. So again, keep up the great work and tell everybody you know how much you look Politically Direct with Randy Uribe. Can you do that for me?
I will do so, and I can't wait to post the link to the podcast tonight. This has been a ton of fun, and I will definitely be on again soon.
Yes, and we'll have the episode up
as long as you'll have
the hour. Yeah, absolutely. Listen, the episode in its entirety will be up at the top of the next hour. I'll make sure to tag you. Whatever you can share it with people on your social media, I'd appreciate it. God bless you. Keep up the great work, and let's go Cowboys.
Yes, definitely. Yankees first, though, okay?
Yes, baseball season. That's right. Yep, that's right. So let's go Yankees. And,
and
keep up the great work.
You'll appreciate
Jenna.
This. Yes. You'll appreciate this, Fernando. I'm in Miami for my birthday this month, and my husband somehow is sneaking in a Mets at Marlins game.
Really? Very nice.
Yes, yes. So my only requirement is I get Don Mattingly's autograph when we're down there.
Hey, now listen, Donnie Baseball. You know, when I was in the Little League, every kid wanted to be Donnie Baseball. Come on. I mean, that's just
right?
The way it is.
Yeah, he's a hero.
Exactly. Yeah, he is. And, you know, we'll see what Derek Jeter is doing with that franchise. I mean, they've been in a sad state for some years. So, you know, hopefully Derek can get that franchise turned around. But, again, listen, spring's around the corner. Hopefully it gets warmer. We got baseball season coming up. I look forward to having you back on, Jeanette. Again, keep up the great work. Give my best to Josh. God bless you always, and we'll talk to you soon here on Politically Direct.
Sounds great. Have a great night.
Have a good night. Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Bye-bye. All right, folks, here, 9.5 on the East Coast, a great episode here tonight with Jeanette Hoffman, great public affairs consultant, and certainly you can catch her on Chasing Jersey on My9 with Spadia, great program there. And really, listen, she's a great political thinker. She's someone who's sharp, witty, knows her stuff. And, you know, like I said, it's great to have guests like her on where we can have a very interesting dialogue and a very, very productive one as well. So, again, cheers to her tonight. Folks, again, if you missed any part of tonight's broadcast with Jeanette Hoffman, great public affairs consultant, again, you can see her on My9 all the time on Chasing Jersey, also with Will Spadia and other great political commentators again. Check it out. You'll be able to listen to tonight's broadcast in its entirety by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/politicallydirectnj. Also, more importantly, you can go to www.insidernj.com/podcasts. You'll see not just tonight's episode in its entirety, but all of the previous guests I've had on here on Politically Direct. And you can listen to it from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. Folks, again, I can't thank you enough for joining us tonight. If you have a topic or issue you want to hear about coming up next week, do me a favor, write to the show's inbox, which is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Once again, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. It's going to, my inbox gets filled all the time. I love hearing from you, and certainly I make sure to answer all my emails promptly. So again, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. If you have thoughts about tonight's episode, what you think about tonight's conversation with Jeanette Hoffman, or even last week's conversation with Executive Director of Garden State Equality, Christian Pescarino, or even the week before that with the New Jersey Republican Party State Chairman, Doug Steinberg, or any other previous guests, write to me. I'd love to hear your thoughts and feedback. And any suggestions for future guests, write to me, folks. I'd love to hear from you. PoliticallyDirectNJ@yahoo.com. And don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, @politicallydirectnj. You can also follow yours truly on Instagram @your_favorite_Fernando. Also, if you're on Twitter, check me out @professor@FUREBE. Folks, brand new followers, brand new likes each and every day. Without you, the fans, it would not be possible. I love you all. I'm deeply grateful to each and every one of you for showing love like you do on the show's social media. Again, last but not least, don't forget to like Politically Direct on Facebook. Brand new likes every day, tons of and shares based on the Facebook page, so check it out. Folks, and don't forget to go to www.insidernj.com for the absolute best coverage in the political scene in New Jersey, and actually the best journalism anywhere, bar none, that you'll find. It's always with Insider NJ. Again, check them out, www.insidernj.com. Once you go on the website at the very top, you can click on the subscribe button, and you'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing there, and it'll be conveniently delivered to your inbox. So in the morning when you're having your coffee, maybe walking your dog, maybe you're catching the cable news morning shows, or like me, you're watching sports shows like ESPN or preferably Fox Sports, because I'm more of a Fox Sports guy. You know, I'm always checking my smartphone, I'm always checking my email. It'll be right there in your inbox, can be delivered every morning. The morning intelligence briefing, courtesy of Insider NJ. Again, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to follow them on Twitter, like them on Facebook, and don't forget, folks, that make, you know, when it comes to politics and everything that's going on in the city of New Jersey, don't forget to start your day with Insider NJ. All right, ladies and gentlemen, again, great episode tonight. Again, if you missed any part of it, with Jeanette Hoffman, great public affairs consultant here in the state of New Jersey. Also, you can see her on My 9 on Chasing New Jersey. Check it out, www.insidernj.com/podcast. That's podcast, plural. And you can check out tonight's episode in its entirety, as well as all the other ones, absolutely free of charge, once again, for any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. So, whether it's on your morning commute, folks, and hopefully you're staying warm during your commute, getting your day workout in, walking your dog, doing laundry, maybe doing some homework for my students, you know, really that well-deserved spring break. Enjoy it. Take a break. Tune in, and you'll be happy that you did. And never forget, folks, that it is real. It is here. It is politically direct. Good night. Shrewsbury, New Jersey. Got some fans out there. Thanks for tuning in tonight here, folks, on Blog Talk Radio, of course, and really, folks, again, please party responsibly. Don't forget to change your clocks forward an hour this weekend as daylight savings time will kick in this Sunday. Hey, it'll be great to see sunlight after 7:30 in the evening here. So hopefully some warm days are ahead. Again, folks, spring forward as daylight savings time takes place this weekend. So again, folks, I can't say it enough. Don't forget, you know, I'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio, where we will have exclusively Ms. Sarah Nybert, Deputy Mayor of the Township of Mendham, New Jersey. She's also the President of Fair Property Taxes New Jersey, a great nonprofit here in the Garden State, advocating really, you know, analyze policies to better inform taxpayers on what's affecting them. Again, a lot to talk about next Thursday night live at 8 p.m. with Sarah Nybert, again, the Deputy Mayor of Mendham Township, but also the President of Fair Property Taxes for New Jersey. So again, folks, I'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.
Oh, angels from above, you know you make